Okay. D'accord.
Well, the book of Ruth is traditionally read at Shavuot. And what happens in the Jewish community is that they read the entire book of Ruth. And it's not often that you come to a congregation where an entire book is read, because we normally focus on a few verses here or there. But what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to ask some of you to read a passage, if you're happy with that. By way of introduction, we'll just think a little bit about Ruth, and that might help too. But if you have a Bible, find the book of Ruth. It's after Judges, which is after Joshua, which is after Deuteronomy.
Worry about it. If you start hitting Samuel, you've gone too far.
You've gone too far. Yeah. Now, Samuel is the suggested author. In Jewish tradition, he is. And he wrote the first part of Samuel, and obviously not the second book because he's already passed away, but it's written in his name because it continues the theme. And so this book is during the period of the Judges. And if you think about the Judges in terms of the period, you'll find some stark contrast with the book of Ruth. You find unfaithfulness, faithfulness, war, peace, love, hate, lust, sex, love, all of those things that are opposite come out in this book versus the book of Judges. And so it is a counterbalance. In Jewish tradition, it's not stuck in the same place as it is in the Christian Bible. In the Jewish Bible, it's found amongst the five scrolls, the five Megillot. So it's at the very end of the Bible rather than with us, it's near the beginning. It's the same.
So you're saying it's after Malachi?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the order of the books are different. The books are the same, but the order is different. So in the Jewish order, there's the five books of Moses, then the prophets, and then the writings. And the last part of the writings is the five scrolls, and this is one of the five scrolls. So it's near the end of the Bible. So if you get a Jewish Bible, yeah, it'll be different in the location, but the text is more or less the same. And this book leads from the time of the Judges to pointing towards the kingship of David, because that's where it concludes. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask, and if you're happy to read, we'll just go around the circle. If you're not happy to read, just pass on. And we'll start reading the book of Ruth. And we'll do, say, the first five verses.
In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband.
So I'll do some comments along the way, so just be ready for the next ones. So verse 1 clearly says, in the days that the judges judged, or and the judges governed or ruled. And the Hebrew word could also imply that the judges were being judged, because most of the judges in Israel were not upstanding. They were
corrupt.
That's not the word I was looking for, but that's your terminology. Okay. So there's a famine in the land. Now, how far is Moab from Judah?
Not very far.
It's just across the Dead Sea, isn't it? And when you think about it, where does the rain come from in Judah?
Okay, from that side.
From the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
So to flee to the other side, it's fleeing into the dry area. So it doesn't make any sense. Unless the Lord specifically withhold rain just for Judah. And that's what this is all about. This is about the judgment. Now, his name was Elimelech. How did you say that?
And you Elimelech.
Yeah, Elimelech. God is my king, or my king is God. So Elimelech. That's what the name means. Naomi means pleasant. Sorry?
I was going to say pleasant.
Pleasant.
The Bible says,
yeah,
my delight.
My delight. Yeah, that would be good, because that's what she is. And so throughout this story, that's what she is.
She's our delight as well, isn't it, in the group?
Sorry? She is. She is. She's our delight. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they have two sons, Mahlon. Mahlon means sickly. Anybody named sickly over here?
Why would you call your son that?
Because he was sickly.
But she wouldn't know that when he was first born.
Well, maybe she did.
Well, he certainly lived up to his name.
Yeah.
Didn't live up to his name. That,
no. The other one is called Kilion, and Kilion means pining. And he was pining away. And so these are not particularly great names. And they come from Bethlehem, the house of bread, the house where it should have been plentiful. But now they have to go to Moab. And Moab, from my father, those are the people from Lot and his daughter.
Yeah.
From whom God said, they shall not enter the congregation to the 10th generation. So these are not the people that you want to flee to.
But this makes it even more remarkable. If you look what happened.
So now we have two commentators?
Yeah.
Okay.
So how many generations down would it have been?
We'll come to that at that point. Okay. We'll come to that at that point. So one is named Orpah, and Orpah means the back of the neck.
Sorry?
Mine says fawn. Fawn, yeah. And that's the Christian interpretation. But Orpah means the back of the neck. Yeah. And the other one means Ruth, or the other one's named Ruth. And Ruth means?
Friend.
Friend, yeah, because we still have that in English retained. Somebody who's ruthless. Who's friendless, yeah. And so both the boys died. Now, they've already lived there for 10 years. And if they've been able to marry, that means that by now they are...
20?
Well, they're in their 20s, in their late 20s. Mm-hmm. And then they died. Mm-hmm. And there is no offspring. And usually having no children means you're under a curse of God.
When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you, as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud, and said to her people, "We will go back with you to your people."
That's okay.
About 5 verses.
That's good. So God is visiting his people again. It's indicating that he's coming back, as if he had left. And in Deuteronomy it says that God will surely hide his face if they would do evil. Deuteronomy 28. And so that's what now is being lifted up from them. And so Naomi and the two daughter-in-laws return. But do they really return? Only Naomi returns. Mm. The daughters have never been there. But the text is implying as if they've made repentance. Because that's the same word, that word for turning. And then she thanks them because they've been kind to her and to those that have died. And she says, go home, it's too late for me. Go home, find a new husband. And they said, no, we'll return and stay with you and your people. Verse 11.
And Naomi said, turn again, my daughters, why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I should say, I have hope if I should have a husband also tonight, and should also bear you sons, would you tarry for them till they were grown? Would you stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieved me for much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave under her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law.
Initially what she says is true. Have I yet sons in my womb? She's too old to have children. That's true, but the second part, is that true also? Am I too old to have a husband?
No.
No, that's not true, but they get the message. I'm too old, and even if I had a husband, would you wait? Orpah then returns to her gods. Do you know who her gods are? Sorry?
Molech.
And Molech was famous for?
Child sacrifice.
The firstborn child would be sacrificed to Molech. Molech also had a consort, a female goddess that hung around him, Asherah, sometimes. And there would be fertility rites with that. And so there would be temple prostitution. We all know the rest of the story. When you think about that in terms of Ruth's statement later on, your people, your God, my God, what is she saying? Your God is nice, but I'm going back to the familiar old ways, including that kind of worship.
So is that where the significance comes in of back of the neck, the name?
Yeah, she turns her back on her family, on her new faith, and she disavows all of that, yeah.
No, but with Orpah.
Yeah, she turns her neck, and so she returns.
Yeah, right.
So she turns her neck, yeah.
Away from God.
And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after me. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. The people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also. If aught but death, but thee and me. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So they two went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that the city was moved about them, and they said, is this Naomi?
Just stop there for a minute. Let's look at these verses. Ruth hears her sister-in-law and says, I'll go back to my people, I'll go back to my worship. And Ruth then says, no, I'll stick to you. Naomi says, return, who am I? But Ruth makes that huge declaration. Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people, my people. Your God, my God. Most Christians are happy with that last phrase, your God, my God. And they've taken the God of Israel and said, it's now my God. But forgotten about the people. And both of them are there. Yeah. Your people, my people.
And the fact that it was before God.
Yeah. Mm. It's the cultural identification that she gives first. And then there's the personal identification with Naomi, where you die, I'll die. And there I will be buried. And then may, and then the name of the Lord himself is mentioned. The four-letter name of God, Yud Heh Vav Heh, Yahweh, or Hashem, sometimes we say, or may the Lord do this to me, or worse, if anything but death parts you and me.
Mm. Wow. That's a heavy call she's making.
It's an incredible statement that she's making here, because it's a personal identification with Naomi, it's an affiliation with Naomi's family and society and culture. And faith.
She must have had a tremendous influence on Ruth.
Influence on one and yet not on the other. They were both living in the same house. Mm. But with one it stuck, with the other it doesn't. Mm. Think about this. Moab was cursed to the 10th generation. She now comes in and she knows she's not going to be welcomed. Would you go? It is like being a black man in the 60s and saying, yeah, I'll live in southern Alabama. I don't think so. Most of us would have said, that's no. Too hard.
Yeah, I'll move north.
Exactly. But they do return, and she is determined to go with her. And they return, and they come unto Bethlehem. And the whole city is astir. The word city here really means settlement. Yeah. Bethlehem wasn't a huge city. But, you know, the whole city. Is this Naomi? And then verse 20 onwards.
She said to them, call me no longer Naomi. Call me Mara. The Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has dealt harshly with me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? So Naomi returned together with Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, who came back with her from the country of Moab. They came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Keep reading.
No, that's great, thank you. She says, don't call me pleasant, but call me
bitter.
For the Lord has gone out against me. He has dealt Mara with me. He's dealt bitterly with me. I went out full, I had a husband. I had children, and I've come back empty. There is nothing left in my quiver. The Lord has witnessed against me. The Almighty has afflicted me. And it's the beginning of the barley harvest. And that's why we read this at Shavuot, because Shavuot is the beginning of the barley harvest. It's the first of the harvest. After this, you get the wheat harvest and the fruit harvest. And this is the beginning of the harvest period. Yeah.
God didn't tell her to go to Moab, so why is she blaming him? I mean, he wouldn't have told you to go on that way.
There is no text that tells anybody to go to Moab.
No.
Not in this book, nor in any of the other books. No. So, no. However, you know, in grief, you do state things that may be an overstatement. And we saw that already in the sense of that she said, am I too old to have a husband? That's an overstatement. Mm-hmm. Am I too old to have children? That may be true. Mm-hmm. So it's the same here. There's an overstatement. She's dealing with her grief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking people today are the same. You know, they do things God tells them clearly not to, and then they blame him when it all goes wrong.
That's right. Sean, can I ask you to read just one verse?
Which one?
The next verse. Chapter 2, verse 1.
And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, and the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz.
Naomi had a... And then the most English translations, including yours, said kinsman. It's actually not true. It doesn't say that at all in the Hebrew text. It said had an acquaintance. Later on, he's called the kinsman. That's true. But at this point, he's just called somebody they know. An acquaintance. Somebody who's... He's a cousin of a friend of a nephew of mine, I think. He's related, but I don't know how. That really is what the word here initially indicates. And he's a man, he's a kibur chayel, a valiant man. Gideon was called that same phrase. A mighty man of valor. Usually it's a military, but in this case, probably more to do with wealth, because that's what's being emphasized. And his name is Boaz. Anybody know what Boaz means?
Swiftness.
Swiftness, yeah. That's one. And the other one would be? One of the two pillars in the temple. In his strength. Sorry? In his strength. And so there is some debate about, is it swiftness? And he is swift because he continued to be swift about how he responds and about his responsibility. But in his strength would be right too, because he does these things in God's strength, not in his own. So either one would work.
Is there any translation that gives that relative as acquaintance?
The Hebrew.
Yeah.
Your translation, I don't know what you've got.
Mine.
Life application.
Mine
Bible.
Was a relative, Naomi's husband.
Yeah, mine's a relative. Yeah.
Relative is a little.
The Bible says in law.
In law would be better.
Relative.
No, but an acquaintance would be the more literal. But it's. We've interpreted by the later text rather than what the text says.
Oh, okay.
And that's okay sometimes, but it's already...
Paul, excuse me. Something doesn't add up to me in your point. I mean, surely the inheritance...
We'll come to that. No, you're jumping.
That's what I'm saying. If you talk about the inheritance, then it has to be a relative.
And we'll come to that.
Okay.
So he is a relative... But not a close relative.
Ah, okay.
He's actually a cousin.
A second cousin or something.
At best.
Yeah.
Once removed.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
So he is a relative, but really he's only... I have a cousin in Perth. I think I met him once. It's that kind of relationship. Somebody they know.
Yeah.
That really is what the word is indicating.
Okay.
So, verses 2 and 3.
So we're at Naomi now. Naomi.
No, Sean.
No. Barely.
You missed them.
We'll come to you straight after. I don't know why did we jump here?
You did.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
I must have known what version of the Bible she was reading. Okay, sorry, Naomi. Chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. You're welcome.
So Ruth the Moabitess said,
said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him, in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech.
Hmm. So both in Moab and in Israel at the time, they had the opportunity to go and glean in the field, to go to the edges of the corner of the field. Faithful people, and it seems that she's either aware of it or that there was also a custom amongst the Moabites, would leave the corners, the edge, empty. So that they wouldn't glean and harvest there, so that the poor, the orphan, the widow could go there. So that's what she's now hunting or going after. She departed and gleaned in the field, and she perchance chanced upon the portion of the field that belonged to Boaz. There is a chance, one in a million, and she hits upon that field. It perchance chanced upon that field. Verse 4-7.
Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter."
Boaz came up from Bethlehem. And how does he greet the people? Yeah. So Numbers chapter 6, that's the kind of language he has in his mouth, that Aaronic benediction. When you read through the times, it's the time of the judges. And what did they normally say? "Let's worship other gods. Let's do wrong things. Let's go after bad things." So not only is he a part of the godly remnant, he employs the godly remnant and pursues them. And he knows who is there because he recognizes this one woman. If you're a wealthy landowner, you've got 5-6 fields and there's about 20-25 people working on it, why would she stand out?
Because she was new. He knew the others.
Mm. Possibly.
God pointed her out to him.
Possibly.
The clothing.
Clothing? Why?
Because she's
a widow.
She's from a different culture and she's a widow. Mm-hmm. And so the Moabites might have had different garments on. Mm. That's one. And widows usually had black garments on. So they would be distinctive too. So he's saying, who was she? Now, he's been close enough to recognize that she's a young woman. So he must have seen up close, but still didn't recognize her. And the response of the overseer or the servant in charge was, she's been working hard here, which is great. Verse 8-13.
Then Boaz said to Ruth, "You will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young woman. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." So she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" And Boaz answered and said to her, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth, and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. Then she said, let me find favor in your sight, my lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants.
Boaz takes careful note and he inquires about her. And he goes then to her and says, stay in the field that belongs to me. He's offering her protection. He's commanded the young man not to touch her. Why?
She'd be an easy target.
Yeah, it's the time of the judges. Very easy target. If you would bash her up or rape her, nobody would blink an eye. She's one of the enemy. But he's commanded his servants not to touch her and even to provide for her. She falls to the ground, bowing her face to the ground. Why have I found favor since I am a Nochri? I'm a stranger. I am outside the covenant. That's what she's saying. And that's because Boaz has made that inquiry and he's saying, you've been faithful, will be faithful. Verse 12, may the Lord reward your work and your wages, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. Academic works now write, it's a zoomorphic reference. Yeah, that's great, isn't it? It means that there's an animal reference made and applied to the Lord. He has wings. God doesn't have wings, so that's not quite what is meant here, is it? But where was she gleaning in the field? In what particular part of the field was she allowed to glean?
The wings.
The wings. Yeah. That's right. In the corners. Jewish people at the time had special garments on.
Yeah.
What was on the wings of the garments? Sorry?
The tassels.
The tzitzit. Yeah, all of those words are related. The corner, the wing, are all related. And today, out of Malachi 4:2 and the Hebrew 3:20 in the English Bible, we sung with healing in his wings. When David was hiding in the caves and Saul came in and relieved himself, what did he cut off? The wing of his garment, the hem of his garment. And when Jesus, the woman with the issue of blood, came up after Yeshua and touched the hem, the fringe, the wing of his garment. When the kingdom of Israel was torn away from Saul by Samuel, it was that wing that was torn off. The word here, kanafecha, is applied in the sense of a prophetic declaration. And she doesn't know this yet, but when you look past, present, future throughout Scripture, what you see is that God is saying, people who wear this are people who are priest and king, who have prophetic sanctioning, who are healing in his wings. And the ultimate person that finds all of that is Yeshua. So she is seeking under his wings the refuge, because he can provide refuge truly. And she responds, how is it possible that I found favor in your sight, my Lord? For you've already comforted me by allowing me to glean in your field, and you've spoken kindly because nobody will touch me. Though I am not one of your... And the word that is used here for maidservant or for servant is really the slave of a slave. It's the lowest version of servanthood that you can get. Verses 14 to 16, please.
And Boaz said unto her at meal time, come thou hither and eat of the bread, and dip thy morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn. And he did eat and was
satisfied.
First and left. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Let her glean every among the sheaves, and reproach her not. And let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not."
Verse 17.
So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley.
So at mealtime, Boaz says, "Come hither," or "Come here." In the rabbinic writings, in the Midrash Rabbah, it says that this is the messianic meal. Here, Boaz is represented as a type of Messiah who invites the poor, the orphan, the widows, those that are downtrodden, to come and share a meal with him. And she sits beside his workers. And she is served roasted grain or parched grain. She is served rather than she is serving, as it should have been. She ate and was satisfied, and even had some left over. She rose and cleaned. And Boaz then says, even if she comes amongst you, don't rebuke her. Treat her kindly. Even if she oversteps the mark, hold back. Pull some grain out, even deliberately for her. Even to the point of an ephah. An ephah is about 22 liters or 22 kilos. So that's a fair amount of barley that she's now picked.
Paul, but why?
What do you
obviously
mean?
There's a prophetic in this. Because why is this guy, you know, appreciate that he's saying, because of my word from, I guess, the other elders, that you've been so kind to your mother-in-law, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to be kind to you. But he's overly kind to her.
He doesn't have to. He extends grace beyond grace.
That's
absolutely
what I'm asking. Yeah, yeah.
When we come to typology, that'll become clear.
Okay, fine.
Verse 18 to the end of the chapter.
She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead." Again Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, so that others do not fall upon you in another field." So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
Look about the time that is within this passage. She comes back and it's on that same day. So on that one day, she brought home 22 kilos. This is on the first day that she goes out. It's an amazing feat that she's doing. Her mother-in-law clearly recognized that this was grace beyond grace. "Who took notice of you? Who is he?" And then she reveals that the man is Boaz. Naomi then blesses him, may he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness of the living and the dead. Naomi then says he is a relative, he's one of our closest relatives. And what does that tell you about the family?
Godly family.
Sorry?
They're a godly family.
They're a godly family, yeah.
They're rich.
They're rich. But her particular statement, he's our closest relative. Sorry?
So there wasn't a lot of family.
That's exactly the point.
But you just said he was an acquaintance in chapter 2, verse 1.
Yes.
So he was very distant.
Yes.
And
so.
They're really bereft.
There are very few. And so now when you reflect upon the names, Mahlon and Kilion, does it make sense?
Yeah. Okay, so
the whole family.
There's a genetic thing here.
Well. I'm not a doctor, so I can't comment on that. But I can say that based on the names and based on this statement here, there's not a lot of family. Mm-hmm. It's rare to find a relative. And she chanced upon that field. And now the light goes on. Hang on, he is a relative. Come to think of it, he's a close relative. That's what's happening here. And she then stays, not just for the barley harvest, but also for the wheat harvest. We're now talking 3 months. Chapter 3, verses 1 to 5.
Ruth's mother-in-law Naomi told her, "My daughter, should I not make inquiries about your financial security so you'll be better off in life? Isn't Boaz one of our close relatives? You've been associating with his women servants lately. Look, he'll be winnowing barley at the threshing floor tonight. So get cleaned up, put on some perfume, dress up, and go to the threshing floor. But don't let him see you until after he's finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, be sure to notice where he's resting. Then go over and cover his feet and lie down. He'll tell you what to do." Ruth replied, "I'll do everything you've said." So she went out to the threshing floor and did precisely what her mother-in-law had advised.
Naomi is seeking security, a marriage. That's really what she's after. Now, is not Boaz our close relative? Mm-hmm. Kinsman is another word here at this point that is being used in the translations. And he's there tonight. Wash yourself, perfume yourself, take off your widow's garments or your strange garments, and now put on your, some translations will say best garments. Really, they are different garments. And go down to the threshing floor. Don't let anybody know until he's finished eating and drinking. If he lies down, notice the place. And uncover his feet. Uncover his feet. Stephen Sizer, the fairly well-known English figure, said, "She's now acting like a prostitute." If this happened in the book of Judges, I would have said yes. But this is not in the book of Judges, this is in the book of Ruth. When it is not unfaithfulness and ungodliness, but godliness and faithfulness that is being highlighted. So why is she uncovering his feet?
Giving him the... Sorry, I don't mean to... I forgot to interrupt. Was that rhetorical?
No.
He's going to give you... Then like it's engaging conversation, he'll tell you what to do in court. And he will tell thee what thou shalt do.
There must be some pretty direct ploy.
Yes, it is. It is bold. It is bold beyond measure. You're right.
Because he says, in the piece that I'm going to read, he says, "Don't let anybody see you."
Yes.
Right, because it is a very... Then, well, so you tell us, what does it mean to uncover his feet?
So, uncover his feet. Why is she doing that?
Because if your feet are cold, you wake up.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point, because they're sleeping outside. So in Israel, what happens during the day? Warm winds from Saudi Arabia and from the Arabian Peninsula come in, and it's nice and warm. But during the night, the wind shifts from the Mediterranean, and the cooler wind breathes in. And when your feet get cold during the night because they stick out of the blanket, what do?
You wake up.
Yeah, so that's what that is. Mm-hmm. It's just to make sure that he just wakes up. That's all this is. Yeah. Nothing else. There's no sexual connotation. There's nothing else. It's just a little thing to say, hey, this probably will get him to wake up, rather than poke him in the ribs, because that might be a bit much. And he can then say, look, you've stepped too far or not, but this is private, because he'll see you.
How clever, though. Yeah.
Verse 6 to 9.
So he went down, so she went down to the threshing floor that night and followed the instructions of her mother-in-law. After Boaz had finished his meal and was in good spirits, he lay down beside the heap of grain and went to sleep. Then Ruth came quietly, uncovered his feet and lay down. Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over. He was surprised to find a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he demanded. "I am your servant Ruth," she replied. "Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer."
Boaz has eaten plenty. He's drunk sufficient. He lied down, and his heart is merry. In other words, he's had a few. She comes in, she sneaks in secretly. She sneaks in, uncovers his feet, and in the middle of the night, when that shift happens in the climate, in the temperature, the man is startled, shocked. Not frightened. Some translations will say frightened. That's a too strong a word. And he then says, "Who are you?" And she says, "I'm Ruth." But now she's using a different terminology for her. She's not saying, "I'm a servant of servants," but now she's saying, "I'm a servant." Mm-hmm. And she's recognized that because of the grace that has been now extended over the 3 months, that she now has some standing. But she's doing this at night, so that if he says, "You've gone too far," she can step away.
And nothing's lost.
And nothing's lost. No honor, nothing lost. And what does she ask? Spread the...
your mantle. Yeah,
the corner of your mantle. That is that whole kanafecha again, that whole, will you be my kinsman redeemer? And now that concept of that talit, the prayer shawl, the fringes, the tzitzit, is extended to the kinsman redeemer. The kinsman redeemer is mentioned twice, Leviticus and in Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 25. And it says that he must be a relative, he must be wealthy, he must be willing and able to redeem. Now those kind of things all kind of apply to him. In Leviticus it says he must be a brother or an uncle. Well, that's not the case. So technically, under the law of the kinsman redeemer, she cannot apply. Because she is not related to him. Mm. It's not her brother-in-law or her uncle-in-law. It's a distant cousin at best.
Yeah, in her case for sure. Mother is different.
For the mother it would be a lot closer.
Mm. Yeah.
But for her there is, you know, you gotta go back to Abraham before you have some connection. That's a long shot. But even with Naomi, it's her husband. So it would be a long shot even in that sense.
But this presumes Boaz isn't married him.
If Boaz chooses to take up marriage.
No, but I mean, it presumes that he isn't already married.
No, not really, because in biblical law at that time, you were allowed to have multiple wives. Mm. It wasn't the norm. Often it's kind of normal, but only very wealthy people or kings would do it. But apart from that, normally it's one husband, one wife. So he might have been married. He might not have. There are some traditions that say he was a widower. I don't know. There's nothing in the text that tells me he was married or a widower or not. So we don't know. But she's asking him now to be that kinsman redeemer.
In the Living Bible it says, she replied, make me your wife according to God's law, for you are my close relative. That's how the Living Bible
from. Yeah. But even there, when you think about it, is she a close relative?
No.
Not by a long shot. And it's... Sorry?
Colin Stock uses kinsman redeemer to refer to the Jewish corporate relationship to which Yeshua, Jesus.
Yeah, and so... think about that for a minute. Yeshua, before he came to earth, was he related to us? He was our creator, but was he really related? So he's a little bit like Boaz, isn't it? Mm. He is our kinsman redeemer. But it's not until he steps into his humanity that he becomes a relative. It's a little bit like this story here too. Who does he redeem? Who is he called to redeem?
All of us that's lost.
The far away.
Yeah. So that's for Yeshua. What about Boaz?
His family.
His family. But she's no family. And that's the same for us. To God, we're his creation. We're his creatures. But it's only when Yeshua stepped into humanity that he then becomes our kinsman redeemer. Or the possibility of becoming our kinsman redeemer.
Maybe Boaz is like Jesus when Jesus redeemed. He's not going to redeem Jews, but Jews and Gentiles, as Ruth is a Gentile.
We'll come to that in a few minutes. Verse 10. Who's up? Verse 10 to 13.
The Lord bless you, my daughter, he replied. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning.
Picture yourself as Ruth for a minute. May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. She's younger. That's what he's indicating. And he's doing that again by saying, you haven't run after a young man. He's not the most wealthy man, because there are other richer men in town. But there are other poorer in town. But he's willing to chase her now, because she is a woman of excellence or of valor. Now, how would you feel if he said, look, I like you, but somebody else has rights to you. Let me check with him first.
But that's just the law.
No, you're a lost parcel. You're a lost parcel
at the ticket office. And somebody else may well have the rights. Hang on, Boaz, you don't want to do that. That's a huge risk. this could go horribly wrong, because who knows who that guy is? I know you, and I've worked for you now for 3 months, but who's that guy? I mean, your heart stops at that point, and you would say, don't do this. But if he wants to redeem, let him redeem. Because it's also about the redemption of the land. Leviticus 25, while it talks about the Goel, is more about the redemption of the land.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah,
it is about staying. Yes, yeah. And it is about making sure that the land stays within the clan.
Yeah.
Would you think that Boaz is actually, he just blessed her, may the Lord bless you,
mm-hmm.
like he's someone that's a kind of a kingdom person, and he's working in a kingdom level. I mean, he's not post-Christian.
Yeah.
He's out there doing God's thing, and so he's expecting the Lord to do his thing.
You're right. He's being obedient to the law at this point. And so the law of the kingdom is to redeem, but it is about the closest relative. So honoring God in this, even though it may be...
Mark his heart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge risk he's taking. So she lays at his feet, there's no hanky-panky, until morning, and rose before anyone could recognize her. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. The people who guarded the threshing floor with him would have seen her. And that's why he's saying to them, let it not be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. Because normally women wouldn't be allowed to be there. This is an area for the men. Yeah.
You said that they were sleeping outdoors.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
And then you said this is a threshing floor. Is this in a building?
No. It's an open space. It's next to the heap. It's an open space.
They're sleeping on the ground.
They're sleeping on the ground.
Which is the same next to the heap of grain.
Yeah.
They were camping.
Just a flat area.
The threshing floor of Aruna used to be just a flat piece of stone. And they would bring the grain there, crush it, and then winnow it, throw it up. And then the chaff would be blown away, and the grain kernels would fall to the ground, and they would sweep that up. And that would be swept into a pile.
So this could be just a flat area of stone.
Yeah. You don't want to have too much soil on it, because that becomes grainy when you eat the bread.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Grittle.
Crunchy. Yeah.
Crunchy. Verses 15 to 18.
Bring your shawl, he told her. Then he tied up a bushel and a half of barley in it as a present for her mother-in-law and laid it on the back and returned to the city. Well, what happened, dear? Naomi asked her when she arrived home. She told Naomi everything. And gave her the barley from Boaz, and mentioned his remark that she mustn't go home without presents. Then Naomi said to her, just be patient until we hear what happens, for Boaz won't rest until he has followed through on this. He will settle it today. Living Bible.
Yeah, if his name means swiftly, Boaz, then that last phrase here is telling. He will not settle it. He won't rest until it is settled today. So that would make sense in that sense. Does anybody else have in verse 15 a different measure for the barley?
Yeah, rather than a bushel? Six scoops of barley.
Six scoops or six? Six ephahs, six measures. Normally that it's not interpreted. It's just indicating the quantity. Six times 22 is?
A lot.
Thank you. 132, thank you. Yeah. I knew that somebody would be smart.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of weight that she's carrying here. Wow. Not only is she hardworking, but she is incredibly strong. And so however much that may have been, it says more in the Hebrew it says six meshes of barley. He lays it on her, she returns.
Mine has an asterisk next to it saying 6 measures, an unknown quantity.
An unknown quantity, that would be a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want her to go back empty-handed. This is a present for your mother-in-law.
But she had to be attractive, because this guy keeps giving the mother-in-law extra stuff. You know? Let's just be honest.
But Mara also provided an apparent reason for Ruth being there.
That's, thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. People would conclude she came to secure a supply of grain to carry home prior to the heat of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of speculation over why there would be 6 meshes, and the answer is we don't know. We just don't know. But she's saying he's going to make something happen today. He won't rest. He'll make this happen. We who know the rest of the story know what's going to happen. So think about it. What would happen before the next verse happens? Because in the next verse we have Boaz at the gate. So what would have happened? He's given her the meshes of grain. She's gone home. What would he have done then?
Send a message to this other relative.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He sends a message to the other relative and say, hey,
come.
this would have been via speed mail. Pigeon dove. Pigeon carrier.
Maybe he twitters, you know.
Twitter. He had a Twitter account. Very good, Harry. Very good. So he sends a message saying, hey, we need to discuss something urgent. There is more to harvest on this land. I want you to come out. Because there is some dispute over who owns this. Well, hang on, this is about big bucks.
Yeah.
Let's settle. I'll be there tomorrow at the gate. No worries. Verses 4.
Was he harvesting Naomi's field?
No. This is his own field. But the near kinsman might not be aware of that. And it might have been used and just given to her. Because if the land is unoccupied, other people might have used the land. We don't know. It's at the time of the judges, there's a lot of ungodly things happening. So other people may have been abusing the land. Let's read verses 1 to 6. Chapter 4, verses...
Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat him down there. And behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by. And unto him he said, ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit ye down here. And they sat down. And he said unto the kinsman Naomi that is come again out of the country of Moab, sells a parcel of land, which was our brother's Elimelech's. And I thought to baptize thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants, before the elders of thy people, if thou wilt redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is none to redeem it besides thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Then said Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, that must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance.
Wow. Boaz sent a Twitter out, and this man now comes up and he says, hey, turn such and such a one. What did it say?
What verse?
Verse 1.
Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down.
Such a one. Any other translations?
The close relative. He just says My
friend.
Friend? Friend. Come on, friend. Friend.
Turn aside, friend.
If we read it in modern Hebrew, it said, turn aside, John Doe.
Wow.
What does that mean?
When you don't know who the dad is.
Oh, okay.
John Doe.
Wow. John Doe and Jane Doe.
John Doe and Jane Doe. That's yeah, what this is. From this phrase, they've taken that. He is not named. He's the first in the family not named. It's to make sure that he isn't shamed. But from this phrase, they did take that down. Yeah, that's an interpretation. And that's a little bit too far at this point. That's what he is. He's the nearest kinsman redeemer.
But if he's not named,
yeah,
does that mean he was illegitimate?
No, no. It's just not to shame him. Because later on we know that he won't redeem it. And then it would have been a shameful thing. So it's trying to avoid that. He took 10 men of the elders of the city, and they all sit down in the gate. And in the gate is where the judges sit. So this is the time when judgment will happen. It's early in the morning. And he says to the kinsman redeemer, Naomi has come back to sell the land. Leviticus 25:25. And I thought to inform you. So buy it before these who are sitting here. That is the elders of this town. So that everybody may know. But if you don't redeem it, I'll redeem it. And there is nobody else. It's a very small family.
So it means Boaz has got kids that would buy it.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, because he's not a young guy.
He's not a young guy. Then Boaz said, on the day that you buy it, you also acquire from the hand of Naomi. So who does the field now belong to?
Naomi.
It doesn't belong to Boaz, he's just the intermediary. You must also acquire. It is included in the transaction. She is a piece of real estate. In one sense. The widow of the dead. The widow of the deceased. Is she really property? No. But does she go with that piece of property?
Sure.
Yes.
Well, that's what Leviticus has taught you. Yeah. Now, that's why you marry, you know, the key. It just goes on.
Within the family. Yeah.
Yeah, and it goes back to the question that was asked. Was it the Sadducees that asked Jesus? What happens if she marries one guy and he dies and they went on seven times?
And so what was the real answer that you and I would have given? Where was the police investigation after so many people died?
Where does she keep the poison?
Exactly. Exactly.
This also goes back to Judah, and he had sons.
Ur and Onan.
Who got killed because of disobedience.
The Lord put him to death, yeah.
Even though I don't understand it, because the Bible says you cannot marry XYZ in Leviticus, but it seems that you do marry.
So
the inheritance.
The male line, the rabbi state, of the Moabite clan or the Moabite tribe cannot intermarry until the 10th generation. But to get around that, they looked at Ruth and said, she clearly married in. So therefore, we have to make this a male-only aspect.
This is 10 of generations?
10 generations.
Or more?
I think it's 10.
They're
not allowed to enter the congregation of the Lord for 10 generations. So by now, there's not 10 generations. But it applies to the males, not the females. Because tribal descent and family affiliation in biblical times was always the male. So whoever the father was, that would be the children. So if the father was Judah, children would be Judah. Even if the mother was from Levi or from Dan, if the father was a Moabite, the children would be Moabite. irrespectively whether the mother was Jewish, made no difference. That's a general rule. So here, she marries into the family, and therefore she would become one of us, part of the family. Even though in the entire book, she's never called Jewish, 4 times she's addressed as a Moabitess. In rabbinical Judaism, she becomes the great convert of Judaism and takes upon herself the whole yoke of rabbinical Judaism, which didn't exist at the time. But that's, it's a different mythology. So only the males are excluded, not the females.
But she made that statement, didn't she?
She made the statement.
And you know, so your God is my God.
Yeah.
Know. Okay, so she converted in that sense.
In that sense, yeah.
The raising up the, you know, the dead person, yeah, wasn't really going to be this John Doe's child.
No. It's going to be Boaz's child. But in this case, is he willing to put the inheritance that he has for his kids on the line? Because if he has a big piece of land and he has 2 children, 2 firstborn children, he's got to cut the land in half. And his own firstborn son by his first wife may lose a lot of land.
And any children by whom will
acquire half the land.
Half of this John Doe's.
The original land, yeah. So the land combined, cut it in half. Because he has then 2 firstborn sons. So the closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself because it would jeopardize my own inheritance. You redeem it for yourself. You may, for you have the right of redemption, but I cannot redeem it. It is all about the land, the redemption of the land. Verse 7 to 9.
Now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning the redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoes and gave it to his neighbor. And this was a testimony in Israel. Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he threw off his shoe, and Boaz said unto the elders and unto the people, you were witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Ilion's and Malon's of the hand of Naomi.
Now it's the custom in former times. It's the custom of earlier times in terms of redemption. Now the redemption is mentioned in Deuteronomy 25. But in Deuteronomy 25, when they pull off the sandal, they also spit in his face. But this is not about that redemption, because it's not the brother's wife. This is now an acquaintance that is being redeemed. And so this is not Deuteronomy 25. So Ruth never spits in his face. But she does take off the sandal, or he removes the sandal. And this is called a shoe covenant. There are a number of covenants mentioned in the Bible, and this is one of them. And the shoe covenant would mean that you've now sold a parcel of land, and it is no longer yours. And only when you buy it back, or redeem it back, you will regain the shoe. These probably would have been Jerusalem Nikes or sandals.
Oh.
So the man removes the sandals.
I think they were Keens, because he was pretty keen.
He
on
was
Ruth.
Pretty keen. And then Boaz makes sure that the elders and all the people who were there are witnesses this day that he has acquired. Kaniti, he has acquired all that Naomi had, all that Elimelech had, all that Kilion had, all that Mahlon had. It really only belonged to one person at this point, but he now becomes the sole inheritor of all.
So is the unnamed person,
yeah,
suddenly magically become the inheritor of everything?
No, no, no. He took off the shoe.
Sorry, the unnamed person.
Because he has the right of redemption, and so technically, it is his. He can choose to do what he wants with it. But he says, no. Nah. So he takes off his shoe and hands it over to Boaz and says,
he's
I don't want a part of this.
But it's only righteous that he has the right to buy it. From
he has the right to buy.
That's all. He can't
because
just take it.
He can't just take it. But he's the closest. And because she has no rights at this point, he can even demand what the price will be.
Oh, okay.
So he does have a lot of power at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But he says...
No interest.
No.
So Naomi cannot take off her shoe because she's a woman?
She's a woman.
This is men's...
It's a man's business.
So were Naomi and Ruth there?
They were there.
You
think so?
Yeah.
Think
why
so?
Not?
It's her property being sold.
I would assume they're there. I don't.
Yeah.
Why not?
I always would presume that they wouldn't be there because it was men's business.
Yeah.
But they're at
the
gate. It's an open space.
It's at the gate where the men go.
Yeah, but it's an open space. It's where trade happens. It's where the market is. So it's an open space. I'm going to assume that they are there. So we read till verse 12, was it?
No, we have to go to 12 next time. I've only read up to 9.
Okay, good.
We start at 10 now.
Yeah. Verse 10 to 12.
That's me. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, the wife of Mahlon, to be my wife, to maintain the dead man's name on his inheritance, in order that the name of the dead may not be cut off from his kindred and from the gate of his native place. Today you are witnesses. Then all the people who were at the gate, along with the elders, said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you produce children in Ephrathah and bestow a name in Bethlehem. And through the children that the Lord will give you by this young woman, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah.
It's quite an interesting line there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So he acquires the Moabites in order to raise up for the dead, and he says, you are all my witnesses. And they say, may this woman be like Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah. Now that makes sense to us because they are the patriarchs of the family. Yeah, so that makes sense. And may you achieve wealth or children, may you be of standing in Ephrathah, in the field of plenty, and be famous in Bethlehem. Great. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez. Now, hang on. Who was he again?
I have no notes on him, I'm sorry.
Tamar was his mother, Judah was his father.
Tamar?
Josh and Lord Judah.
And Tamar was?
Josh and Lord
Judah's daughter-in-law.
Judah's daughter-in-law, and she had relationship with him.
She posed as a prostitute.
Mm. She's the lady that was hanging the basket. Out the window.
That's right.
She dressed in widow's clothes.
That's right.
She presumed off because she wasn't given the third son because she didn't want the third son to get the chop from the Lord.
That's right.
So Onan
was wicked. Onan failed because he spilled his seed. And now Judah is saying, I'm not giving her the next one. I'm going to wait for her to die. She's a Canaanite. And she presses into the family of God and says, I want to be a part of this family, come hell or high water. I'm going to be what deserve, I'm going to get what I deserve, my kinsman redeemer. And Judah becomes her kinsman redeemer, even though she does it by trickery. And from that we get parrots.
Can I, we've got 5 seconds. It's Genesis 39, 27.
38.
Yeah, 38 and verse 27. And due season, the time of Tamar's delivery arrived, and she had twin sons. And they were born. One of them reached out his hand, and the midwife tied a scarlet thread around the wrist of the child who appeared first, saying, "This one came out first." But then he drew back his hand, and the other baby was actually first to be born. "What?" the midwife exclaimed. "How did you break out first?" And ever after he was called Perez. Then the baby with the scarlet thread on his wrist was born, and he was named Zerah. That's so, what he's referring,
so
referring to.
So Perez is breaking forth, and Zerah meaning seed.
Yeah.
And so the rightful heir, even though the one who broke forth came first.
Yeah.
Anyway, verses 13 to 17.
So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel. And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him. And also the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "There is a son born to Naomi," and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David.
Ruth was unable to conceive of her first husband, but now the Lord enables her to have children. And the neighboring women said to Naomi, "The Lord has not left you without a Goel, and may his name become not famous in Bethlehem," as was stated earlier in verse 11. It's now in all Israel. "And may he become a restorer and a sustainer of life in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you very much, is better to you than seven sons." Wow. It's the women of the village who named the child, and they name him Ophed, Obed. Ophed means servant. Servant, yeah. And so she is conceived, she is considered the mother here. It is her offspring. He's the father of Jesse or Yishai, and he's the father of David, of David. Verses 18 to 21.
"This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Amminadab. Amminadab the father of Nashon.
Nashon.
Nashon. And Nashon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz. Boaz the father of Obed. Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David."
Okay. And now we're tracing it back from Perez, the son of Judah, from Tamar, who broke forth all the way to David. Boaz is mentioned, not the deceased husband.
He's replaced him.
He has replaced him in glory. And so he shines forth now. And it's to establish that David is the rightful king. that though he has Gentiles in his ancestry, he is the Jewish king. Because when you start the next book, the book of Samuel, it is about establishing David's kingship. Anyway, we've talked for way more than I want.